Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Welcome to Yoga, Birth, Babies, a podcast produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. We will be diving into everything prenatal yoga, birth, and baby-related, hoping to inspire, educate, and empower you through your journey into motherhood. Thank you for listening. For my yoga teacher friends who are interested in working with the pregnant population, Prenatal Yoga Center offers an 85-hour Yoga Alliance certified program based on our three-pronged theory of prenatal yoga: asana, education, and community. Once a year, we hold our three-month immersion program in New York City. For those who cannot attend this training, Caprice and I are now traveling to different locations holding our training at hosting studios where we will spend 6 days working together, exploring and learning about prenatal yoga. This training consists of more than 50 hours working together. We also created a whole membership website with more than 20 videos corresponding directly to the manual you will receive. For more information, check out our website at prenatalyogacenter.com. Hope to work with you soon. Take care. Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg, and I'm your host for Yoga Birth Babies. And today we are so blessed to speak with Gail Tully. She is the founder of Spinning Babies, but let me tell you a little bit more about her. Thank you so much, Gail, for joining today. I'm so excited. So, you know, take this in whatever direction you want. I love your work. I love what you do for women in birth. And so it's just such a thrill to speak with you. But I do feel like I want the women in our community to know, how did you come up with creating Spinning Babies? What was your reasoning and your momentum for it?
Spinning Babies is an approach to easier birth that I came into by observing mothers and babies and how their births were going. I observed how providers were helping them, doctors, midwives, and nurses were helping mothers and babies to go through the birth process, what was working and what wasn't working. And it was a bit about following the clues. And in following the clues, I would see, you know, what were the movements? What was the physical situation going on, as well as the emotional situation? And, you know, in the natural childbirth movement, which I'm part of and I love, we really look at emotions and intent. And I started to notice as I was attending more births that sometimes I was sitting at the side of a mother who had great intent. She was mentally and emotionally prepared for natural birth, but the baby wasn't coming. Strong contractions were continuing, and the labor wasn't progressing, and there was patience, and there were the typical things that we would do for a labor. The mother could eat and drink, and she could move freely and be encouraged to follow her instincts, but the baby wasn't coming. And this led me to, you know, of course, ask the question why and follow it through both an intuitive and a practical route, right into a fetal position. And this was going on in the 80s, 1980s, which was the peak of the natural childbirth movement, by the way, Deb. And that's when 5% of American women were having natural childbirth, and that was the peak of the movement, 5%. In 5%, you know, natural birth became part of the cultural conversation. Maybe 70% of women had an intention for natural birth, but that means something wasn't being supported in their intention. The provider might not know how to support a natural birth because they're trained in technological birth, so they don't have the training for it. America isn't set up to support home birth, although home birth is getting more and more supported, as it used to be a few generations ago. It used to be common, right? Normal. And the other thing is that we just didn't have the understanding of fetal positioning and what to do about it. So some providers are interested in how is the baby laying in the womb? How is the baby approaching the pelvis? So in other words, fetal positioning is how the baby's head is entering the pelvis or what angle is the baby's head as it moves into and through the pelvis? There are positions a baby's head could be in, like the chin could be tucked, and the baby could be having its back towards the left, whether it's the left front, the left side, or the left back of the mother. The baby coming from the left seems to move through the pelvis easier than the baby on the right, or the baby that's posterior, which means the back of their head is towards the mother's back. Spinning babies was really started on how to help the posterior baby, the baby whose back is along the mother's back, through the pelvis easier. And since I started, I became much more interested in all fetal positions, including breech, which means the head isn't even coming through the pelvis first. The baby's bottom is coming through the pelvis before the head is, which can be an easier birth, but it can be a more complicated birth. So there's a lot of attention about breech birth. Anyway, how is the head coming through the pelvis is the question of fetal positioning. Is the chin tucked or is the chin up? Is the crown of the head, you know, the exercise I like to show is putting the hands on top of the head, making a circle, tucking the chin, and putting that circle right around the crown of the head where a little cap might be on a man's head. And we see that that circle of the head presses, if we can press our head into that circle of our fingers and thumbs, we feel the increasing pressure shows that we can manipulate our head into that circle. The circle is going to represent the cervix. If we push to the right, we can increase pressure towards our head's right. If we push to the left, we can increase pressure to the left. We push up, we find symmetrical pressure going into that circle. Turn this all upside down, we have a flexed head down baby moving through the pelvis. Now what happens if we put our chin up? Then our circle comes right down on the flat of our head, right on the top of our head. We have to move our circle. We have our chin up. And now there's space in the webbing by our thumb. There's overlap. Our thumbs and our fingers don't reach the outermost part of our head front to back. We notice immediately that we can't push up into the circle. We can't add pressure pushing to the right. We can't add pressure pushing to the left because our head is already extended. And this represents, if we turn it all upside down, the baby who's coming into the pelvis posteriorly. That baby, the posterior baby, can't help the mother with the birth. And the mother's not getting a symmetrical pressure in her pelvis to give her the instinctual messages of what to do in this labor. Some women will figure it out. But most women with a posterior baby are not getting the feedback symptoms, the feedback signals that a baby with a tucked chin would have. So now the mother has this long labor. She's not getting extra signals what to do about it. So she's being patient. She's going through the long labor. Her providers are being patient. They say some labors are like this. And either the baby comes out or the baby doesn't, which is why some providers pay attention and some providers don't. They're like, the baby either comes out or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, we have a cesarean. And cesareans are relatively safe these days. So we don't have to pay as much of attention to fetal position as over 100 years ago when cesareans were much less safe. And so doctors wanted to know everything about fetal positioning and the anatomy of the pelvis because they could lose the mother if they had a cesarean, which still happens today, but very unusually, mm-hmm. highly rare. And so I hang around with a bunch of people who are interested in natural birth, right? Yoga teachers or midwives or doulas. Not all doulas are so interested in natural birth, but in the 1980s, that's when I started observing this. Natural birth had a much value in those days. And now the value of natural birth is returning because of our understanding of probiotics and that babies that are born through the vagina have better probiotics in their gut, typically, than a baby born by cesarean or a baby without labor or even a baby born by induction. So now we see that the optimal development of the human being is when labor starts on its own and when labor is able to proceed on its own and finish on its own. And if the baby's in a good fetal position to fit through the pelvis, in other words, the chin is tucked and the baby's coming down from the left, that seems to make it easiest for the mother and baby to have a vaginal birth. And less pain for the mother and less time, maybe not less than 5 hours, but less than a couple of days, is nice for mothers and babies to support their skin-to-skin contact and their enjoyment of each other, of meeting each other eye-to-eye for the first time. The things that regulate our physiology are eye-to-eye contact, skin contact, our breathing, and relaxed breathing. And these are things that happen when we have immediate newborn mother contact, skin to skin after a birth, after any birth, no matter how the baby got born. Skin to skin contact is going to help regulate the baby's physiology, which means the baby's brain, which means the baby's mood. So the more skin to skin without drying the baby off and introducing hospital flora, the better for mother and baby as far as the child's mental and emotional and immunological health goes into the future. Mm-hmm. So the more we have science, the more we see that the birth process is a perfect process. What's not perfect is our modern society, right? So mm-hmm. women are now living, of course, we've always lived in a gravity environment. And living in gravity means if we have a sudden stop or if we remain in one position for a long time, whether it's suddenly or whether it's because we're hanging out in front of our computers all day, we're hunched over our device with our shoulders wrapped around us and our psoas all tightened up, right? Because we're all looped in that and unmoving while we flick through our keyboards. Or we're in sports. Or we're professional dancers or horseback riders or yoga instructors that are doing 50 squats a day on a hard floor without variation. You know, these are the things that happen in modern society. We always have, and the other thing is driving. So as we're driving our cars, we are really activating our right leg only. Our left leg is passive and our right leg is tense. And then we're taking turns and we're in a highly concentrated state in our bodies. And then we have a fast modern pace so that we're in a very alert state all the time. And then the baby is in the womb in a reflection of our state, which is not to make anybody feel guilty. I mean, we live according to our culture. Mm-hmm. How are we going to live differently than our culture other than a fundamental and dramatic intent to change? You know, we don't just stumble across a change from everybody's habits around us. We learn these habits from when we were in the womb.
So backing up a little bit, so I love everything you're saying. So basically, if the baby's malposition is going to impact birth because the baby's not going to fit through the pelvis as well, and you're saying a few things that we're doing that's causing imbalance. So what imbalances are you seeing in women's bodies? Is it just structural, the pelvis? Is it soft tissue? Is it intrauterine restriction? Is it psoas? Or is it kind of all of the above?
Deb, I love your question. Which individual organ or joint or, you know, the bony pelvis, which is it? And, you know, we think of body parts as separate because that's how we learn anatomy.
But I guess it's all together. Everything feeds into it. All feeds. I guess I think, you know, I have a lot of students complaining of SI joint problems. And so I work on stabilizing that. And also, of course, I have to answer my own question. When I work on that, I have to work on the psoas. I have to work on balancing the pelvic floor. So I guess I'm answering my own question. But what can women do? In yoga, we can work on balancing the structural pelvis and the psoas and the pelvic floor. But what can women do to help encourage and promote a healthy fetal position that will help that will impact their birth?
Beautiful, Deb. We have a spectrum of motion that we go through in our day. And so expanding those different motions with self-care, we can start with self-care. Then we can start with structured movement like we get in a yoga class or an exercise class. And I'm really interested in suppleness, not strength. If we have suppleness, we will have strength. But we can have strength and then have rigidity. And if we imitate the exercises that are popular with testosterone, in other words, if we want an abdomen that looks like a 14-year-old boy, we will have a birth that is like a 14-year-old boy's birth. In other words, there isn't room for the baby to move through the pelvis. There's no room. And so we want to have soft and supple. And we start with the self-care of stretching. There's beautiful prenatal yoga routines that are using props that are supporting a fuller range of motion. And then for women that are not so sure about yoga, they might feel a little intimidated by it. We're just talking about increasing the range of motion, right? So stretches. So look at it how you want. And using the breath, the beautiful thing about yoga is that you're matching your breath with your movements, which brings a better physiology to it, and which means more success. Then walking is very important. And learning to squat in pregnancy, as long as there's no contraindications, which would be a threat of miscarriage in the first trimester, right, or a sincere threat of early birth. So then we wouldn't squat. If there's a breech baby after 30 weeks, we wouldn't squat until we get the baby head down. In other words, by adding balance, we're going to give the baby room to move head down. And then once the baby's head down, you can squat. So squatting, especially an anterior pelvic tilt, which means putting that bottom out towards the wall behind you, it's easier if someone hangs onto a strong post or two doorknobs, like you open the door and you hang onto either side of the doorknob or the bedpost, and really let the arms lift over the head and engage and flip that bottom up and away from you. Like you're trying to sit on a chair that's just too far out of reach. That's a nice squat for practicing the supple motion of the lower back and the rear part of the pelvic attachments up at the crest of the where the SI joints are. And it develops the butt muscles, which is going to help in the front so that symphysis pubis doesn't get so wonky. Painful to walk later in pregnancy. Okay, so I'm talking about daily activities that women can do to increase their range of motion. Walking, squatting, yoga. Pelvic tilts are nice for motion. They're not going to guarantee a good fetal position. They're not going to change the baby's position. But when we add balance, the baby will settle with gravity, head down with their chin tucked. And that is the normal physiological position of a fetus, to be in the C curve, in the fetal position, which means their chin is tucked. Now, if they're not in that position, if they're posterior, their chin's going to come away from their chest and put the top of the head into the pelvis. They're going to be in alert state, and they're going to be more active. The mother's going to feel more kicking all over the front of the womb because the limbs of the baby are towards the front. So the mother feels a little, by 30, 32 weeks, the mother's feeling little hands once or twice during the day. It's not going to be much. Right around her bladder or lower abdomen, right above the pubic bone area. See a knee. The mother will, when she lays down at night, she'll see a knee go past her navel, a little tiny bump occasionally, and feel like there's kicks on both sides of the center line, this dark line that develops in pregnancy. If she has little light wiggles down low and bigger kicks up high on both sides of that center line, then the baby's facing forward. In other words, the baby's posterior, the back of the head is towards the mother's back. This typically means, especially for the first-time mother, that the chin is not tucked and the baby's head will seem larger. than it really is. And this can make labor longer. Now, it doesn't for everybody because not everybody's pelvis is longer side to side. A few people have longer front to back. So, and then it wouldn't necessarily be an issue. But you brought up soft tissues. And it, if you think about the tensions or symmetry of an envelope, the uterus is enveloping the baby, and the soft tissues are enveloping the uterus. The ligaments are like ropes to a hot air balloon, and the fascia is connective tissue. It's like the wrapping, but it goes through everything as well. So there's no place where there isn't the soft tissue, connective tissue, right through the muscles, right through part of the ligaments and the and right into the bone. So we're all connected. And by restoring the balance that we're designed to have, we make the optimal room for the baby. And when the baby has room, the baby will put itself into an ideal position for the pelvis. The baby wants to be in the most ideal position it can be in. So let's make room for the baby. We don't have to stress out about it. We're in motion. So we can start at 20 weeks with daily activities and getting some body work if we need it. This will help most women to have a straightforward birth. If she has a uterine shape that's like only half a uterus, or if she has two portions of a uterus that tend to be a little smaller than the regular uterus, then she needs to start getting balance immediately or even before pregnancy so that we're giving as much room as possible and hoping that little tiny fetus is head down by 20 weeks, right? Maybe by 14 weeks. But for most women with a room in her uterus, we can start at 20, 30 weeks. And make room for the baby. But some people are only hearing this and they're already 40 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
You know, the window is not as open, but there is still a chance for fresh air. So we can start that motion and mobility. Now, we talked about daily activities, but on the website, there's also some traditional activities that women can do with their birth partners. The Rebozo sifting helps the abdominal area, the broad ligaments and round ligaments, and gives the mother a relaxation. It helps her out of that chronic alertness that we have in the city life and helps move her into a more peaceful, relaxed state. And that's where the baby likes to be, in the C shape. So the mother is the mirror of the baby. The baby is really the mirror of the mother. So we always want to help them together. And so this Rebozo sifting is something that a couple can do, or a woman can do with her doula. It's really lovely with her girlfriend. Anybody who's tall enough to hold the Rebozo up, and I've got it on spinningbabies.com website. So another set of activities are from Dr. Carol Phillips. She was a chiropractor in Minneapolis, who's now in Annapolis, Maryland. And she is a creative genius with anatomy and motion. And she's introduced a series of techniques that help all sorts of people, but are profoundly useful in pregnancy and birth. And they're using a static stretch release that attends to the muscle spindles to lengthen muscles temporarily. I don't know how long, 45 minutes, 2 hours. Everybody's different, but it's long enough to feel improvement. And when it's repeated, we can keep that improvement going on and restore the balance that nature has given us for giving birth to our babies. And these can be done in pregnancy. They're called the sideline release, the forward leaning inversion, standing sacral release. They're myofascial releases, the instructions for how to do them are on the website. They're under the Three Sisters or the Fantastic Four or you know, the techniques, you can find them different ways on my spinningbabies.com website. And these are very popular with nurses because they're meeting parents for the first time in labor. And if there's a long labor, they'll do the sideline release or the forward leaning version, which is really getting upside down and going through a contraction in labor, upside down, basically, with the knees bent in a stable, safe location with someone spotting you. And it can't be done if the woman has high blood pressure because that would be dangerous. But for a healthy woman, she can do this through a contraction. And it helps reset the space around the cervix to give room for the baby. She comes way up on her knees afterwards. The instructions are on the website. Sideline release, if she's on a, you know, if she has high blood pressure and she can't get upside down, she can still do sideline release. Once we add balance, then our gravity and movement are going to be more effective. So then the lunges and the motion, the walking and the going on the stairs and the traditional, the, I don't mean ancient traditions, but I mean the things that we've been using for natural birth in this country will be more effective. Because they're effective for a lot of women, but midwives and doulas and nurses ask, why does this work for some women and not for others?
I've run into the problem that I've used some of those in births, and I do get a little pushback from certain care providers and nurses. Actually, one of my friends just said, oh, I'm going to try the three sisters, and the nurse was like, what are you trying? And so can you talk a little bit about the Fantastic Four and the three sisters, as well as the three principles of pregnancy, so that if a nurse isn't familiar with this, the mom or her support person or her doula still has access to this?
Sure. The three principles I've alluded to are their balance, gravity, and movement. And we put balance first because then gravity and movement will be more effective. And the nurse knows gravity and movement. Let's get out of bed. You can sit on the toilet. We'll put a stool under one foot, you know, or you will stand here at the counter and do some rocking or try this birth stool, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We can imagine that if the pelvis was more open and the muscles were softer, that the baby could come easier, right? That just makes sense. And so what we're going to do is go back and use the balance first so that then there is more open pelvis, there is more softer pelvic floor, takes the edge off the pain and gives the baby a chance. It gives the uterus a chance to turn the baby into the position it needs to fit the next level of the uterus. You see the next level of the pelvis, rather. The pelvis has three levels that are different shapes. And so the baby's head needs to flex and turn to fit those shapes. And the pelvic floor is the key rotator. So if the pelvic floor is very tight from trauma, from exercise, sports, or an injury, then the baby's head comes down on the pelvic floor. The pelvic floor feels very sharp and painful to the mother. In other words, labor feels more painful than she expected, and which tends to be true anyway, but, you know, really more painful, sharp. And so we do a sideline release, which is one of the three sisters, and now the pelvic floor is softer. The baby says, thank you very much for getting that tight muscle out of my way. I'm going to turn now through the pelvic floor opening, which is like a buttonhole. I can turn and fit the next level of the pelvis and continue on my way. Thank you very much. And so the three sisters are three out of the Fantastic Four. The Fantastic Four just adds another one because wherever you have three sisters, you have cousins and friends. So there's not only three techniques to do, but I call them the three sisters of balance in honor of the three sisters of agriculture from the Northeast Native tribes that have the three sisters of agriculture, corn, squash, and beans, which replace the nitrates and the nutrition into the soil. One replaces what the other needs. And in the three sisters of balance, it's a little bit different. It's like if you use the rebozo sifting, the first sisters of rebozo sifting from the Yucatan midwives of Mexico, who taught us that this little jiggling motion, this very nice vibration that's made with the rebozo around the mother's abdomen, is very relaxing. It activates her parasympathetic states, gets her out of fight and flight. In other words, it reduces the fear of the moment. The mother feels confident and calm, and it helps her broad ligament and round ligament to a degree. Now that she's feeling good, she can do the second sisters. And you know how second children tend to be more feisty than first? The second sister is forward-leaning inversion. The mother kneels on the edge of the bed, perhaps, or the couch, or at the top of the stairs if she's at home, and comes down with help from another person. Because maybe she's doing this since 20 weeks pregnant. See, doesn't matter the baby's position. She's only going to do it for 3 breaths. But in labor, she does it through a contraction. And she comes down onto her elbows and lets her head hang with her knees up on the bed. So her elbows are on the floor and her knees are on the bed. Now she takes 3 soft breaths, or in labor, she does it right through contraction. She might need a doula to climb under the bed to put eye-to-eye contact with her, get her head under the bed so she can see the mother eye-to-eye, and talk her through this contraction, which will be a bit of a challenge. And then the mother comes back up to kneeling and kneels way up on the bed. And that's when the technique works. It's not hanging that makes it work. It's hanging that makes the ligaments longer and helps the ligaments around the cervix. See, the cervix has at least 6 ligaments attached to it, like spokes on a bicycle. So if those are not straight, the cervix doesn't have much room. You can imagine if the axle of the bicycle, the hub of a bicycle wheel, got twisted and all those spokes were twisted and wrapped around the hub, that, you know, we wouldn't have very good rotation. So now we straighten that all out by hanging, but it's coming up into kneeling that puts the uterus and cervix back into a symmetrical place, a place with room. And the baby says, thank you very much. And sometimes that's all it takes. And now we have a baby. So we don't want to do some of these techniques with a mother in labor unless there's a midwife, nurse, or doctor handy, because there's a potential the baby could come right out. Now, sometimes it's not that easy, but sometimes it is, and it's surprising how often the three sisters will make it easy. So we did rebozo sifting, got the mother into a good mood. Then she got upside down and came back up again, and her cervix was softer and easier to accept the baby's head. Now, the next one, the third sister, she just has to lay down on her side, and the person helping her lines her up so her shoulders and her hips are stacked. She lifts her top leg. She's laying on her side, right? So she has a top leg. She lifts up and over and hangs off the edge of the bed. Now, the person helping her is holding her hip back, because if that hip leans forward, the technique doesn't work and they've done it for nothing. She has to be straight. And the instructions for how to do this correctly are on spinningbabies.com. It's called the sideline release. It's much more than just laying on your side. It's a static stretch release of approximately 18 muscles on each side. So if we're going to make the pelvic floor longer and softer on one side, we better do the other side. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're going to have an asynclitic baby. And you know how that goes. So let's turn the mother over and do the other side. It doesn't matter if she has an epidural. Doesn't matter if she's doing a natural birth. She can do the sideline release as long as she has good support and good health. For most women, it's not painful, it's relaxing. But if the baby is asynclitic in the pelvic floor, it can hurt. And if she can power through it, she's taken that pelvic floor and opened it around the baby's head. And some babies will straighten out, and some babies will just fit in their mouth position, or in other words, the position that's not ideal. But as long as the pelvis and the muscles are soft enough and the pelvis is mobile enough, usually the mother can push the baby out, and that is because she's gotten upright and she's doing some pushing. For an asynclitic baby, it takes hours, but it can be done. Now, if the pelvis is not mobile and it's rigid, or it is actually small, and then you have a baby whose head is not, the chin is not tucked and symmetrical, so that that little crown of the head is turning into a cone shape, then we have some problems, and a cesarean is a lifesaver. But we don't want the cesarean to be a lifestyle, because we're disrupting our probiotics, we're disrupting the mother-baby connection, and we're putting mothers at risk, and we're putting babies, you know, at a disadvantage for the bonding and attachment process, which we now know improves immunity and mental health, as well as being an enjoyable experience for mother and baby.
So if we adopt the three principles of Spinning Baby, as well as the Three Sisters of Fantastic Four, that extra one, and we focus on fetal position, it seems like there is a much higher chance of more functional birth, therefore lowering cesarean rates. So that's
what I would like. That's what I propose. We definitely need research. As I find out, I can't really do my own research, but I'd like to do some people's research. It's not really something a student can do, because students are only allowed to research what's already been researched.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a bold and visionary researcher. And I know that I've had nursing groups where I've taught tell me, not only myself, but also my trainers, talk about the reduction in the cesarean rate in the months after a Spinning Babies workshop. So these are working. We have, for parents, we have the Spinning Babies parent class. It's kind of for birth nerd parents that really want to know more than the average parents. It's not a complete childbirth education by itself. So they might want to watch another video on what are the stages of labor and what is labor. But it is enough information. And then it takes it for the mother who wants a VBAC, or for the first time mother that does, you know, that's concerned about either pain or about, she really wants to avoid a cesarean. It discusses the common causes for cesarean, how to identify them, how to know that things are normal. So it compares normal to...
Well, can we talk about that for a second? Because you did talk about some of these things that can be done during labor. So I often hear students saying, you know, I don't know what position my baby's in, and what if I go into labor and it is malpositioned? So you gave some great information, you know, Three Sisters, about how to change a baby during labor. But let's back up to the idea. Hold on, I actually lost my train of thought. All right, so
How do you feel normal from a challenging labor?
Oh, yeah. So what is going to tell a woman that her labor is not functioning normally? You know, and even normal is in quotes, because what is normal? But there's definitely signs of baby's malpositioned. So
what are those signs of malposition? That's an excellent question, Deb. So in pregnancy, what are the red flags? I would say pain in pregnancy, pelvic pain in pregnancy. It hurts when the baby kicks. You can't sleep. You can't sleep because it hurts your pelvis too much. These are signs of pelvic instability. And it doesn't really matter the baby's position. Let's get some comfort to the mother. So these three sisters really help comfort with the mother. The fourth sister, or the fourth fantastic, is the standing sacral release. And so these are techniques that are on the website. If the baby is not head down by 30 weeks, I suggest adding balance. I would suggest doing the daily activities from week 20. By week 30, paying attention to, is my baby head down? And maybe giving a really focused week or two from 30 weeks to 32 weeks on helping the baby be in a good position, because most babies are settling into their birth position by 34 weeks. And if the baby at 32 weeks is laying sideways or laying breech, or, you know, even posterior, then doing a more concerted effort, maybe getting some body work. And the body work that I like is a comprehensive pregnancy-based body work that attends to the connective tissue of the fascia, as well as chiropractic alignment, abdominal massage with the Maya. Abdominal massage is good. Cranial sacral therapy is good. There's a lot of great stuff out there. But really, somebody who's been working extensively with pregnant women so that they can see what they're doing and how it affects the birth is really important. So you expect to see other pregnant women in the waiting room. Expect it to all be about pregnancy and babies in the waiting room. Otherwise, it's not a person that is focused on pregnancy and birth. So self-care, body work, special techniques, and then as we get into labor, we expect that the labor starts on its own. And, you know, really, that's it. 41 weeks and maybe 41 weeks and a few days for most first-time mothers. 40 weeks might be the due date, but that is not the typical onset time of labor in a healthy, well-nourished pregnancy. We're really expecting 41 weeks and 2 days. So any induction before then should only be for dire medical reasons, not for trying to avoid stillbirth, because trying to avoid stillbirth by inducing early is really not helping. If there isn't a medical reason, like there isn't a high blood pressure, risk of stroke, some kind of, you know, heart problem or whatever, we shouldn't be trying to introduce, shouldn't be forcing labor. We've got more and more studies saying that labor starting on its own is better. So if the mother's in balance, labor is going to start on its own more at the time that nature would have it start. So we see an easy flow into labor, not a start and stop. This is painful and I'm not dilating. That's a red flag too. So then we add balance, and then either that stops and the woman gets to sleep, or that the uterus says, thank you very much, now I can go and do my thing, and labor starts. So it either stops and the mother sleeps, or it gets going, depending on the needs of her body. And so we've added balance to help labor start on its own. Now labor is moving forward, and it's a continuum where contractions get longer and they get stronger and they get closer together. And the mother finds herself going through a series of emotional feelings that sort of match the missing months of her period that are now showing up with each centimeter of dilation, right? So she has different emotions at different times of the labor. And if she just keeps a fluid mind and connects her breath to the needs of her body, she will find that she can cope with a normal labor, and a doula helps tremendously. We've seen that with over 24 studies on the benefits of a non-related, non-professional doula. In other words, it's not a nurse or a midwife, but it is a peer. It's another mother that's helping, or a mature woman if she's not a mother. And sometimes a guy can be a doula. Sometimes a guy can be a great doula. But not the father, because he's having a baby too. And the grandfather is having a grandchild. And so, you know, it really needs to be a non-relative. Okay, so now we've talked about some red flags. If the labors start and stop, if there is sharper pain than the mother was really expecting, the pain seems sharp or it doesn't seem coordinated, it's not a regular symmetrical labor pattern. The pain's going out her hip or down her thigh or just doesn't make sense, too much in the back. So then we can do forward-leaning inversion, sideline release, standing sacral release. We can do it right in labor. And it doesn't matter if the mother's having natural birth or she's on an epidural. These techniques can be done. There's adaptations, and there's taking care and making sure that the mother's safe by having people help her and making sure the surface she's on is the safe surface.
And I think that's important for women to hear, because we know that the majority of our women, even with the intention of having a natural birth, the percentage of epidural anesthesiology is high. And so for women to hear, oh my gosh, I can still work on helping the fetal position even with an epidural, I think it's really encouraging, because I think it could feel discouraging if women were like, you know, I believe that fetal position is important, but I just don't know or necessarily even want to try to go for a physiological birth. So I think just hearing that these things can be done, if the idea is a vaginal birth, I think that can be encouraging.
Exactly. And in pregnancy, it doesn't matter if vaginal birth or cesarean. You can have better comfort. You can sleep better. You have better circulation in the womb, so the baby's getting better nutrition. And in labor, you know, why do women pick a cesarean? Cesarean or an epidural. If they have thought, gee, I would go for a natural birth if it doesn't hurt too much or if it's not too hard, I would try that. I kind of like the idea of a natural birth, but I don't want to, you know, be a martyr, or I don't want to be in a really stressful situation. So what is the setup? One thing is we have a lot of fear about birth in our society, and women are at high pace, so they don't have time to kind of quiet down, go within, and find some alternatives. So here they are coming into the hospital with and a little bit of anticipation, a little bit of anxiety and stress in their lives. And then the staff at the hospital are also at high pace, right? And the nurse wants the mother to have a good birth experience, and she's watching unprepared women with natural birth and seeing them have a hard time because they're scared and they don't know what's going on. They might not even have had childbirth education or understand the birth process. Now it's happening fast and it's a little out of control. And that's the typical experience of natural birth in the hospital. It's rare. It might be less than 3%. And when the nurse sees the mother on the epidural, she sees a woman that's under control, that's in her head, that's, you know, or sometimes epidural doesn't work, but at least the nurse and the doctor feel like they're doing everything they can for this mother. The technology is modern mercy, and natural birth is out of control. That's the belief system. So if you have an interest in natural birth and you know that you can restore balance so that labor is going to be less painful, and then you have a doula who can be with you continually so you can get into your hormones and you can get into a mental and emotional space of calm and peacefulness and flow with the labor, and that when things get stronger or when things feel a little emotional, you have this calm, grounded woman to connect to that knows what birth is about. And there is immense help in that relationship. It actually helps the male partners or the female partner, but it helps the partner feel more intimate to the birthing woman, because the pressure and the fear is off of them too. And the mature doula will give them space to have their intimacy and connection and yet be available in the periphery whenever the mother goes through these little elevations in labor where she needs to connect again with a mature woman who knows about birth and trusts birth. And the doula might be the only one that trusts birth in the whole birth team. Definitely the doctor, midwife, and nurse want the mother to have a successful experience, but sometimes they're feeling that the epidural is the answer to that because they don't see enough of what's possible with balance, with a doula, and with really oxytocin and love in the birth situation. And then they come into that situation, the nurse and the doctor feel what it feels like to have this lovely birth team, and they get off on it too. And they're like, wow, this is really nice. This is going to be really great. Let's have this doula back again next week.
Okay.
And I highly recommend that. We just, as doulas, have to let go of control too and be in the oxytocin of it and let the mother be the lead.
Absolutely. So we understand that fetal position will impact birth, but, and now we're starting to look at some signs of red flags of, okay, baby may be malpositioned during pregnancy, baby may be malpositioned during labor. We have some tools to fix that. How can we now give some responsibility to the mom to start to figure out where her baby is? Because I hear that a lot. Like, do you have a sense of position? And oh, the baby's head down. Well, that's good. That's definitely a start. But then I know you do belly mapping. Can you talk a little bit about belly mapping as well as just getting your mom getting her hands on her belly?
Oh, it's lovely. Belly mapping is a method I invented in 2003 I started out to help doulas understand the baby's position. And of course, then mothers could use it. And it's a bonding experience for the mom. It's good play with the baby. And the more we know the baby is a real person in pregnancy, the deeper the relationship grows. And so the mother actually lays down on her back in her bed with her knees bent. She can have her shoulders slightly elevated, but not too much. Otherwise, she can't feel her baby. And she uses the pads of her fingers as the eyes of her fingers, not the tips, but the pads of her fingers. And feels her belly in four parts. So the mapping is to take all the stimulation of the baby's kicks and wiggles and systemize them into four quadrants, like four pieces of pie with her navel in the middle. It's easier for the mother to start doing this after 36 weeks. Some women can do it at 30 weeks. Some women can't do it until 40 weeks. If their placenta is anterior or the placenta is in front of the baby, then she has to feel around the edges of the placenta. She might not be accurate. If she's a larger woman, she might have a hard time finding the contours of the baby. So the mother lays on her back and bends her knees, and she feels into her womb. Let's start on the left side. And she really palpates until she, which means reaching in and feeling, until she finds the baby's edges. And she finds which direction is the longest part of the baby. Is this hard part of the baby smooth? Is it big and broad like a back? Or is it little and knobby like a knee? And then she feels up the right side very slowly and deeply. She can find the top of the baby, coming over the top of the baby, finding the big bulge, which might be on one side or the other. And where are the small parts of the baby? So if she's finding small parts, they could be hands and feet. And we expect the lighter little fluttery movements to be lower than the navel and the bigger kicks to be higher than the navel. And actually, if she finds the broad part of the back below the navel, she'd have to reach in quite deeply because of the way the body is shaped to find the back. And she might not feel the flutters of the hands at all because they might be towards her back. If she finds both flutters, if she finds hands fluttering on both sides of her center line, which is darkened in pregnancy, then she knows the baby is facing forward because babies play with their hands by their face. And she might then only feel the hands flutter there a couple of times a day or when she's laying down playing with an awake baby. She might see the baby's knee cross under her navel. That's another sign the baby's more likely to be posterior. So little flutters in front, a knee going under the navel. Those are, especially together, those are pretty much letting us know the baby's face is also forward. The back of the head is towards the mother's back. The baby's back is towards the mother's spine. The baby's posterior. The issue with posterior is there isn't room for the baby to get all curled into the C shape in that position. And so the top of the baby's head is trying to get into the pelvis and sometimes makes a bridge across the top of the pelvic opening. And then the uterine contraction can't get that first baby into the pelvis. Sometimes the uterus can get the second baby in. So we have to think about how can we help the chin tuck and the baby turn so it can fit the pelvis like a puzzle piece. The uterus is trying to turn the baby. So the mother in labor could get start and stop contractions while the uterus is trying to get the baby into the pelvis. Or it could get really strong contractions but no dilation. And so we don't care about dilation. We care about where is the baby in the pelvis. And how do we help line up the uterus and the pelvis so that the baby can get sent into the pelvis. And that the three sisters, the Fantastic Four, are very good for that. And once contraction starts, Janie King's technique called the abdominal lift is very good. And I add a posterior pelvic tilt to the abdominal lift, and I call it the abdominal lift and tuck, and it's on the spinningbabies.com website. And you do it with contractions that are trying to get the baby into the pelvis. It works very nicely. So there are things that women can do so they don't feel scared. They feel in control. They feel capable. They're understanding their bodies. They're understanding their baby's needs. And the labor is telling them, if the labor is symmetrical and moving along, great. Breathe, relax, enjoy it. You're having a baby. Start and stop, or there's too much pain, or it's not happening, we're waiting day after day. You know, that's ridiculous. That means we're not understanding. The provider is not understanding the needs of the body. And so way before the labor has stalled out for hours, the mother can start using these techniques to restore her balance and restore labor back on track. And I would say that we could really help most labors. I don't have the statistics on whether that's 98% or, 90% of stalled labors, something like that. but let's do it before the mother and baby start getting tired out.
So now that mom's getting her hands on her babies, hopefully she's going to your website and looking at some of the baby mapping, because I think it's brilliant. I love there's a picture of a woman who like painted her belly where the baby, where she believes the baby is. Can you talk about the ideal position for baby?
The ideal position for baby is the position that fits the pelvis.
Okay, so yes, but what's the most typical position?
You know, and that is according to the pelvis and the soft tissues.
Yes.
The soft tissues of the mother, her ligaments, her muscles, her fascia, her which is her connective tissue, determine the baby's position. The bony pelvis determines whether it matters. So if the baby fits the pelvis, great. That's ideal.
Well, ideally, posterior is not.
Right. Well, posterior babies fit sometimes.
Sometimes.
And sometimes very rapidly. And so that means that was ideal for that mother. Now, typically, the posterior baby has its chin up and it's facing the front, which is the opposite. The ideal position is chin down. In other words, the chin touches the chest so that the crown of the head is coming through the pelvis first. The crown of the head is mobile. In other words, it molds. It's moldable. If the baby's on the left, the baby tends to be more curved and have the chin tucked easier than the baby on the right because the uterus is steeper on the right. So I call the baby that's on the right, even if it's facing the hip, I call that a posterior position because it's more likely to turn posterior when the head gets down on the pelvic floor. This is 1880s. Literature, Jean Sutton brought it back up in optimal fetal position, and I'm observing that it is the course of most labors, unless we intercede by adding balance. And then the uterus says, thank you very much, now I can line this baby up. The baby says, thank you very much, I was waiting for that tight muscle to get out of my way. And the mother says, thank you very much, that doesn't hurt as much.
Yeah, I look at all of this, spinning babies, the prenatal yoga, the body work, simply as tools to help mom and baby function as a unit, working in union, to have a more functional birth, because then I believe mom's going to be happier. So I feel like we're so on the same page, because I don't think one can work without the other. I think they all work well in concert, because ultimately our goal is for mom and baby to be happy and healthy. And I think these really can bring that.
Yes. Yes. And we have to come out of our ideas about what is birth and what is life and go, okay, the way we think about birth in the USA right now, just going, oh, the doctor's going to be there. You know, the babies come out. This has led to 1 in 3 cesarean, 1 in 3 women having a cesarean. So what do we do to revolutionize birth? So birth goes back to women in power, women in choice, women having their babies and babies having their mothers skin to skin. And we have to really think differently about it. We have to engage a different conversation. Women have to rise up. And I think one of the ways they can do that confidently is to understand this body balance. Yoga is very helpful. Regular yoga is extremely helpful. And is it enough? For some women, it's not enough. And they need to be softer in the core or supple in the core and more balanced so that one exercise over and over again is balanced by something that brings other muscles, the complementary muscles, into activity. And that would probably attend to the real stalwart, long-term yogini, right?
Yeah.
And the woman that is just starting out with yoga might not have enough time to restore her balance in one pregnancy. So some body work or some of these self-care techniques that she does with a birth partner can accelerate her road to balance. Some women just do one technique and it's settled.
Yeah, each baby is very different.
Yeah. So I really appreciate what you do, Deb, because you're really bringing the childbirth education to where it works, which is on the mat.
Thank you. It's really a passion of mine. And I feel like I've had such an opportunity to speak with you and Penny Seamkin. I mean, some really amazing people. And I feel like we all have the same message. We want to help moms and babies and the functionality. And I thank you for your work. Where can people find out more about your work if they want to take workshops?
Okay. So I have workshops for providers, for doulas, midwives, nurses. Some doctors come, but I don't have their CEUs. But they would go to the spinningbabies.com website, and we have an events page. And if you don't have a chance to get to an in-person workshop with myself or one of my 7 trainers, then you can take the Spinning Babies parent class, because even though it's for parents, it's pretty geeky, and it will revolutionize the birth provider's perspective of birth, because Spinning Babies is more than a collection of techniques. It is a new paradigm of putting physiology before force and balance for the ease of birth. It is a different look at what we do and how we support birth that frankly blows the minds of midwives that have been midwives for 30 and 40 years. And they're so excited to learn this information and learn this perspective, because they have a lot of knowledge, but nobody's acknowledging what their fingers and their hands know, what their eyes have seen. Nobody's given words to it. So I'm giving words to it in a different approach that reduces force. We can't eliminate force. And by force, I mean the cesarean or the, you know, the interventions that just make birth happen or attempt to make birth happen, which unfortunately aren't easy on the mother and baby all the time. So we're doing physiology before force, and it's a new paradigm. And I really invite the world to explore it. Spinningbabies.com.
And I'll put all this in our show notes as well, on our website and on the on our social media, because I really think parents, new moms, second-time moms, especially the moms that might have had a birth that was challenging the first time, and now in hindsight, they're like, oh, baby position. Now they can go back and work towards something different, or, you know, at least aim for that. So I'll put all this on our website.
Thank you, Deb. Yeah, there's a free information on spinningbabies.com that women can get all this information free. Make a cup of tea and just start reading. Start within pregnancy. And it's going to be a little bit more than they expected. But we're simplifying as we go. So every day we try to simplify some article or another.
Well, I think your work is great, and I hope the listeners out there do go to the website. It really can change the path of your birth, and I believe that will then change the path of your motherhood journey. So yeah. I want to say thank you so much, Gail, for your time and your knowledge, and you're an inspiration for women to really look at how they can be happier in their pregnancy, in their birth, their motherhood. Thank you so much. Yeah.
You are so welcome, Deb. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for this opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful morning. All right. We'll be in touch. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Take care. Bye.
See you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been an episode of Yoga Birth Babies, produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. You can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Thanks for listening.